Good evening, my lovelies, and welcome to the webbed finger delight that is this week's Naked Football Show. In the studio tonight to talk about how the book Ipswich Till I Die is progressing, we welcome back Jane Summerfield.
Hello.
We also welcome Town Fan and the presenter of ICR's Unknown Pleasures, Joe Ward.
Hello.
And, of course, we welcome the font of all knowledge himself, Mr. Phil Hamm.
Hello.
Okay, apart from the book, we'll talk about the Sheffield United game, obviously. We'll mull over the FA Cup draw, and of course, there's a little matter of a local derby down at Carrot Road. So email in with your thoughts to studio@icrfm.co.uk, or you can drop us a text on 07797 800 712. Nice, easy number to remember. Jane, should we start with you and the book before we get into the arguing about football?
Okay, well, I'm here to mercilessly plug our book, which is Ipswich Till I Die, which probably, well, we hope everybody's heard about by now, because we're trying to publicise it as much as possible. It's an anthology of articles by Town supporters, and it's written by the fans for the fans. And we've now got a facility so that you can order in advance. The book won't actually be out until Valentine's Day, when we've got a home game. But you can order in advance, and if you do, you will get your name actually printed within the body of the book. The best place to order is via Phil Hamm's website. Those were the days.
twtd.co.uk/trustbook, I think.
Yes,
slash. www.twtd.co.uk/trustbook. All one word.
Okay. If anyone missed that. Alternatively, you can ring Mary, who's coordinating the orders, on 07787. We hope to have the book out for Christmas, but we just had too much to include, and we've had to sort through it all. So if you want to order as a Christmas present, we will actually send a certificate to the recipient telling them that the book's coming. And we will even volunteer to wrap and send for Valentine's Day if you want to order it as a Valentine's Day gift. Not quite sure how we're going to do that. We haven't actually discussed it yet, but something will be arranged.
It's a plan.
It's a plan. It's a formative plan. So if you'd like to order, those are the places to do it. And if you order in advance, you'll get your name in the book and be a part of history.
Which has already happened, and quite a lot of people have already done it.
I think it's going to be really popular. We've got enough for two books, so if this one goes well, there will be a volume two.
I mean, it's from what I've seen, because there was a good bit in the Greening on Monday, wasn't there? And excellent pieces involving Colin did a good bit, Colin Grindable, for one of the other trust committee members, about his kind of how he came to support Town, really, and through his background and. With his father being a prisoner of war during the war, and Mark Stoneman giving his tale of giving kit out to Iraq, which readers of TWTD will be familiar with, I'm sure.
Did you get the pictures in that book, or any other pictures of those kids?
Yes,
they will be in the book. Yeah, they're definitely there. There was one in the article on Monday, wasn't there? And apparently
there's just too much to write about, really. We've got a fabulous history here, and people have come up and produced stories and actually sort of immortalised memories, which will go when the older generation can remember way back.
One of the bits in the green was Kath Parker, wasn't it, who is the wife of Tommy Parker, who was the kind of town hero of the 1950s.
And I believe we've even gone back further than that.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, amazingly, people in their 80s and 90s have contributed. So I just think it was a brilliant idea. I wish I'd thought of it, really.
Yeah, I do, really. Yeah, it fits very much in with the kind of fanzine ethos.
It's actually
quite a lot of fanzines have perhaps become more historical over the years because, websites have taken over the kind of paper-based fanzine in some ways. But excellent idea, and as you say, without a book like this, a lot of the tales of the early years of Town as a professional club would be lost.
I know the publishers said there was something about when the pitch got flooded, and there's things I've never heard of, really. And you think you know everything about Ipswich Town, and all these little anecdotes are in somebody's head. And until they're actually brought out. I mean, the publishers said they didn't want endless stories about Wembley 2000 or Wembley 1978. They just wanted anecdotes, what I did with my dad or what my mate and I did. And that's what's come, and it's going to be a rip-roaring read. as they say.
So there you go. So if you found
a Wogan-esque book plug.
Wogan-esque.
If we were on TV, I would have a strategically placed copy beside me, which I would fondle occasionally.
But as it's not printed yet, yeah, it's best that it's on the radio.
Indeed. Just a mic. Imagine that, that's imaginary fondling going on.
Right.
Yeah. And good for radio.
I think that's best. And so if you are interested in purchasing a copy, I think they're a tenner, and they're on www.twtv.co.uk/trustbook, or just go to the main website and you'll see
it. Or ring Mary on the number I just
Or ring Mary on. Well, go, give the number again.
Shall I just do that?
We'll do that at the end.
All right, we'll do it at the end. No.
All right,
we need to talk about
it. Next time I shan't read that out again.
Yeah, go on, give us some. We must have something on the old What's It's to get
us
started.
Well, don't you want to talk about Sheffield and things first? Don't you want to actually
talk about
it?
I don't want to talk about Sheffield.
No, I don't either.
No. All right, we will.
Thanks for listening until next week.
Yeah. What, Alan Quinn? What was he thinking of?
It was a good... Yeah. I mean, as Jim said, it was a good save. But I think out of the two penalties, Alan Quinn's one was the worst one.
Is that an instinctive move, do you think? If the ball comes towards you, do you have to put your hand down?
I think Cristiano Ronaldo says yes, but...
Yeah.
Just take it in the face, and then we get 3 points. That was...
Is it... I mean, it's one of these things. It's obviously a trend in football now for players to meaninglessly handle the ball inside the area.
It's like going back to school days when everyone was a goalie. Obviously, they haven't...
Oh, yeah, I know what you mean, like our Friday nights at Cobblestone. It's... I mean, I was thinking about the handball rule, law, generally, in that handball is deliberate, yeah? By definition, it is a player deliberately handling the ball. But it's very rare that you actually get an occasion when a player does actually deliberately handle the ball in the area, which I think, you know, looking at the footage, Alan Quinn did appear to do. Mm. But do you think, and I'll put this in the style in the column next week, but do you think that there's a case for changing the law so that any time the ball hits a player's hand, that's a foul, rather than the judgment being whether it's deliberate or not? Because
I'm not sure. No, I don't think so. Because then if you're on the edge of the box and you're looking to drill a cross in, all you'd think is, well, I could really hit it hard at this guy's hand. And if you've got good enough aim, then that's it's a penalty then, isn't it?
But then again,
if that's the law, then put your arm behind your back
somewhere, haven't you? There'd be a trend of sort of a shirt
with pockets.
Hands were stuffed in the pockets, wouldn't
it? But it'd still be handball, even if it... There was a brilliant thing on Baker and Kelly years and years ago about a guy who had no arms who was playing, right? And he had to wear he's playing and he's wearing a normal kit because it's just a Sunday league thing. And he's got his sleeves hanging down there and the cross comes over and the ball kind of brushes the cuff of his thing. And the referee gives a penalty because he said that's where his hand would have been if he'd got a hand.
No, that's not total in any way.
It's borderline.
But he probably wouldn't, because he probably would have had his hands up or something, wouldn't he? So he wouldn't have hit his cuff.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm not, you know, I would argue that the referee was wrong to give this decision, I have to say. And possibly tasteless, but, sorry, it's just struck me.
The trick is not to move your hand, isn't it? If the ball hits your hand and your hand is motionless, you mustn't move your hand.
But it's got to be deliberate under the law. So
move your hand.
But if there was a penalty last year at Bristol City, I think it was, when Alex Bruce, the ball just kind of bounced funny off the turf, caught him on the hand, penalty kick.
But it shouldn't be. If you move your hand to the ball...
Yeah, there was no intent. Mm. And the dictionary definition of deliberate does involve the word intent. Mm. And so I wonder whether there is a case for... amending the law.
Do you think it would have been given if ours hadn't been given? Do you think he was trying to make amends, maybe?
I think he possibly was.
I don't know, really. But
theirs looked more blatant. Oh,
the linesman. The linesman gave both of them, didn't he?
Yeah, it was the same as linesman, yeah.
People always kind of argue for consistency, and he was being consistent. One was a cross that hit someone's hand, the other was a shot that hit someone's hand inside the area, so...
I think the rule's got to be, if your hand is stationary, it's not your fault, because you wouldn't be able to manoeuvre your whole body just to get your hand in that position, would you?
No.
So if you move your hand, then that would be handball.
So, I mean, that's pretty so much that's as it stands, it. Though. I mean, that is pretty
yeah,
much
well,
as it
stands. Yeah, well, it isn't, is it? Because it can hit your stationary hand, as you just said, and that's still handball.
No, but it's given. But it's not, you know, by the letter of the law, it has to be deliberate.
Hmm. How can it be deliberate if your hand is stationary?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, you know, the only times you ever see players deliberately handle the ball is when it's the last minute of something and someone has a shot on goal and they stop it on the line to hope that their player, you know, their keeper will save the penalty or whatever.
Yeah.
But other than that, I don't think you... Well, occasionally when it's absolutely belted at someone's face and their arm goes across to, you know, as a reaction. But I've always thought it was a bit of a strange... In that, for fouls, they took intent out of the law about 10-15 years ago, didn't they?
Because
you used to have the kind of thing about how he played the ball and the referee couldn't give a free kick. But handball still has got this element of intent about it, in law, if not in practice, in the way that it's... How referees interpret it. That's the word I was desperately grappling for. Anyway, anything else on the old
side? Okay, James Cummings. Assuming Stead will be dropped after performing like a plank against Sheffield United, who do the panel think will start up front on Sunday? And will Super Jim pick experienced players who know what derby games are about, i.e. Naylor, Miller and Ambrose, or will the likes of Quinn and Walters come back into the reckoning?
I don't know, what do you lot think, though?
Haynes.
I think Haynes, not from the start.
No.
Not from the start. Impact player near the end.
25 minutes from the end, bring it on.
If we're talking handballs, then Haynes with that.
And Jimmy won free kick.
Under the letter of the law. Because if you watch it. Sorry, I'll let me brief
just reverting to handball here.
Cross comes over, I think, on that one. Doherty got a toe to it. Put it onto Haynes, it sort of deflected off Haynes and in off his hand. Well, he had no, you know, there was no intention there, or no, it wasn't deliberate. But anyway, so you think Haynes will start?
Well, I don't know, I think the public want Haynes, don't they? They expect him to score. And a Jimmy Wan free kick with a bit of luck.
Yeah, that was very good, wasn't it?
That was brilliant.
I enjoyed that, I have to say, I don't know, I reckon Walters will start.
It's a game crying out for Alan Lee.
Which is unfortunate.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You're not going Walters up front, I think, to start.
Do you think?
Yeah, I'm open to it.
Yeah, I would go with that. I don't see what other choices got.
Well, exactly.
Really.
I mean, Walters presumably, I don't know whether he's going to be fit, but I think the likelihood is that he'll be fit. And in which case, him coming in up front means that Norris can go stay on the right and Ambrose probably stay on the left. Whether Gardner will be well enough or not remains to be seen, and that means Shumi can stay in the middle. It just kind of that's how we've been playing away from home generally, isn't it? And and it also gives us the advantage that if things aren't going so well, Walters can slip into the midfield and we can play five.
I think
across.
I would send Walters out with a bandage on.
I think, yeah,
you know, ready for whatever bang on the head he takes, and he's prepared, isn't he?
He did actually start one game recently, didn't he?
He
with
did,
a bandage on his head,
and
then later on, David Wright came on wearing a tribute bandage.
Yeah, I mean, instead of Laurent Blanc, Fabien Barthez sort of kiss on the head, it should be sort of a Kinyago and Walters sort of headbutt. And then go on.
I think the shop have missed a trick by not having Christmas bandages, haven't they?
I asked them actually, and I said, they said that Boots were already stocking them. So that was the official response.
Oh dear, dear. Tony from Leicester, right? This is a text. We appear to be back to gloom and doom times. If Radio Suffolk's phone in, and those are the days, is anything to go by. If Quinn hadn't done that, which you've just been talking about, then we'd be seventh by now and very much looking at the playoffs. If we can stay in contention this month and strengthen in January, then we should be fourth or fifth. Keep the faith in Jim, everyone. Tony in Leicester.
I think he's
well
got
said.
A point, really.
Yes,
in
so
that
do I.
If we lose a match, it's complete doom and... Or draw a match, even, doom and gloom. And if we win a match, everyone's going, well, you know, let's press on and...
Can I read another one? Only because it's pretty much saying a similar thing. And it's also...
Go on,
Porter Blue, this is all those so-called fans who want Kurbishley in on those were the days need to get a grip on reality. Granted, Jim has been in charge for 3 years, but the first two are with no money, and even then we finished in good positions. This is the first year he's had money to play with. Surely even the dimmest of you can see some green shoots appearing. Rebuilding a team takes time. Tam will be in the Premier League sooner rather than later, but some of you believe it should be next week. Why don't you go off and support Chelsea and Real Madrid if you're that impatient? Finally, he says, and Kurbishley resigned from West Ham before he was sacked, so think about it.
Kurbishley resigned from West Ham not because... I don't think.
Well, he was probably on... He was in dodgy water, wasn't he, at the time?
Really, was he? Yeah, they started the season quite well, didn't they? It was more the case that... things were being done above his head, I think, that he didn't like. But anyway, that's a side issue. But
so it's two
Jane,
things
you're not the biggest Jim Majorton fan, are you?
I was a huge fan when he was appointed. I thought he was the second coming, and I can understand why he was appointed, because obviously he's loved by the fans. I'm not 100% convinced that he's going to be able to take us up to the next level, and I think part of that is the expectation is so much higher. We had a couple of seasons of being grateful for anything. I hope that he can. I just think that at the moment we're going to finish more or less exactly where we did last season, and I think the public or fans were hoping for better. I think that's why some people are disappointed, but it's not immediately obvious to me that Kirbyshley would be any better, really.
And I think, you know, I think we have to stress that I don't think there's probably anything in the Kirbyshley story anyway.
No.
It does seem to be that the fact that there was a kind of rumour going around a month or so ago, the News of the World printed a story that said that he was being targeted, Town denied it, and then I think Alan Brazil, apparently, I haven't heard this, but people have mentioned it on the message board that Alan Brazil has been kind of touting this story on his on Talk Sport, and then it appears in the Daily Mirror yesterday, I think. But, you know, I mean, I don't think that there's anything in the story. I certainly don't think Town have approached Kirbyshley.
I'm not really pro Jim at the moment. I think his tactics on Saturday were a bit just.
Which particular tactic?
It was the Naylor one. I thought defensively we were quite sound. I think if Sheffield United were going to score, they'd have done it by then. I think defensively we were okay. What we needed to do, bring on someone like Haynes, stretch the play on the break. The thing about Saturday was there was really no creativity or pace was the main thing that was lacking, and we didn't seem like we were the home team. That was the thing. It seemed like we had the one goal and we spent the rest of the game sort of hanging back and looking to see it out, where I'd rather see someone, you know, bring someone on to maybe go 2-0 up instead, to make it more comfortable than it was.
See, I would have thought Haynes, definitely. I totally agree with you that with 15-20 minutes to go, bring Haynes on, because obviously we were going to get a bit of a bombardment. But I mean, the Naylor thing, I'm surprised so many people are kind of don't see why it was done, because Darius Henderson had come on about 2 minutes beforehand, and Darius Henderson's always given us a lot of trouble when he's played for Watford and various other people. So I thought it made sense for Naylor to come on as an extra, you know, extra big defender, because I don't think Bruce is the strongest sort of most physical centre half, and they'd already got I'm trying to think who the other fella was who was up front now. Beattie,
yeah.
Who's quite a, you know, who McCauley was, you know, looking after. So, you know, I can see why. What I thought about the goal, I mean, obviously, you know, we're talking about this in the light of the fact that the goal was kind of a bit freakish, in as much as one of our players caught the ball in his own penalty area. But the move sort of stemmed from Volz, who was our fullback, making a huge run down the right flank,
yeah,
and giving the ball away and getting caught upfield.
Yeah.
Now, so rather than the goal stemming from Town being too defensive, I think the goal actually stemmed from Town being too attacking, he said in a controversial sort of way.
Well, I assume that was the idea he brought Naylor on, so he could release the wing-backs to get forward and on the break.
Well, I don't think Jim would have wanted his full-backs to get forward at that stage of the game. 1-0 up with.
But then, if you're sitting with half, you're sitting with half your over half your team sitting behind the ball, then you're just putting up a sign saying, "Come and attack us. We're not going to hurt you," sort of thing.
But you're sitting back in numbers. I mean, I think pretty much any side's going to do that, aren't they?
I've never seen
defending a lead like that.
I've never seen Ipswich do it at home at all, ever.
I think defending one goal lead's a bit dangerous, isn't it?
I think, well, yeah, yeah. There's a risk in it. But having said that, as you say, as I can't remember which one of you said, that we were actually repelling, repelling everything they were throwing at us. Mm.
Yeah, I mean, the goal they scored came from, you know, a freak
event.
But
I mean, I thought that our best chance of getting the second goal was catching them on the break, and unfortunately, we did catch them on the break a number of times. But John Stead appeared to have his boots on the wrong feet, didn't he? And everything he hit sort of seemed to skew miles out. I mean, you know, as the emailer said, but for the Alan Quinn thing, We'd all be sitting here today saying we're fourth in the table.
Yeah.
It all kind of worked out well. What a fantastic defensive performance to repel Sheffield United.
You
inspired substitution.
Possibly, what a fantastic insert.
If we're 1-0 up now, though, you almost expect that it'll end as a draw. You can sort of see it coming, can't you, with a sort of morbid dread that they're going to equalise. It seems to have happened so many times that
we've
snatched the draw from the jaws of victory, you know?
But is that the sort of natural paranoia of all fans that always think that about their own club?
Yeah, so it may be that. But I'm just, oh no, you know, the whole time that we're defending a 1-0 lead, you're just panicking, aren't you?
But in that circumstance, I mean, I think you can understand. It was, what was it, 4 minutes left when they scored their goal? Something like
that was
I think that any manager would sort of shut up shop, effectively, and not try and push forward at that stage of the game. I can remember reading something ages ago. It was Peter Beardsley or someone who was saying that he was playing for Newcastle, I think, at the time, and Jack Charlton was manager, or I can't remember, I might get all the names wrong here, but it was a story anyway. It was a well-known England national. And it was about a minute left, and he'd taken a free kick quickly, and he'd scored a goal, and he expected to make it 3-1, with them previously having been 2-1, obviously. And he got back in the dressing room, and he was absolutely, I was going to say a word beginning with B that probably isn't allowed on the radio station.
Or in front of a lady.
by Jack Charlton, because he says that he should have taken the free kick very slowly and just played it into the corner.
Yeah.
Because if he could have, although in the end it made the score 3-1, he could have lost the ball, the other team could have gone up the end, other end and scored. And I suspect that, you know, that Jim was kind of thinking with that sort of conservatism, which, and I think a lot of managers do, maybe not Joe Royal perhaps, I was surprised
at the venom in the lower north when that goal went in against Jim, because immediately it was not, oh Quinn, keep your hands in your pockets, it was C word Jim.
Why do you think there is this kind of massive number of massive?
I don't know. I think this has split
Jim
the fans,
the large number
and
of
like a lot of things lately.
Like myself, who was in the lower north.
Well, yeah. So was I. I mean, okay.
It started immediately, didn't it?
I think the injection of money and higher expectations
has
got to be one of the main things that has led to, you know, discomfort in the fans.
But do you think there was this expectation that we would just kind of, you know, be where Wolves or Birmingham are then?
Yeah. I thought we would.
But do you think that's...
I mean, then I am fairly certain.
Unexpected.
I think because it's been done in the past, teams like, you know, Hull have got an injection of money, even Fulham.
What were the Hull last year? Hull
yeah, they were quite near the bottom, weren't they? They were very slow.
And Sunderland had a very slow start the year they went up, didn't they? Because when we beat them, they were about second from bottom, weren't they? I mean, I think the club should have handled the expectations much better in the summer. You know, dampened it down a bit, saying, we've had a lot of changes. If the season starts slowly, it won't be unexpected sort of thing. Because I think there was this sort of, particularly because of the home record being so fantastic the previous year, that we'd just kind of push on from there and bang.
And I think that's the other pivotal issue, actually. We were so good at home last year that most people who only see home games saw really good football. And they're now getting exposure to some of the away-type performances from last year, which were dreadful. So I think that's swaying people's views slightly. But I was surprised at just how venomous it was, because it was all aimed at Jim, and it was, you know, the minute that goal went in, people were really... And I don't know where that's coming from. I suppose it is sort of dashed dreams that we would walk this division.
So I just wonder whether people kind of feel, because Jim is inexperienced in terms of, you know, he hasn't had the previous clubs or anything like that, and they just think that he's not... that there's not the kind of experience there to kind of back up his kind of self-confidence, really, that he's the man to take us forward, and that he's... And I think there's some kind of... People don't feel that he spent the money well. I mean, there's names like... You know, people didn't really think Lisby was going to be a good signing, and so far I don't think it's... You know, people have been proved wrong. Mm. And one or two others, I think, that, you know... People,
I mean, the Campo thing will haunt him, won't it, really?
Well, I think everyone was excited, personally, when Campo came.
Yeah, so was I.
Mm. I mean, I think what happened with Campo, I think he'll go, but not for...
And I should be very upset if we sell Bruce, because I think he's... Mind you, I liked Harding.
Well, I liked Harding.
Good.
He's a decent enough player. And
I thought he was good. I thought he worked really hard.
Yeah. But would you have him ahead of either Wright or Bolts or even Thatcher?
I don't know much about Thatcher.
No, I'm not a great Thatcher fan, but...
I'd probably have him ahead of Wright on the left, if you see what I mean. Because I think Wright is a much better right-back than he is left-back. He provides... But, I think we need left-back, I have to say. I think we need... I mean, the Herman story, I thought, was quite an interesting one.
And also, do you not think that something like the Herman story may be the reason that Bruce hasn't been offered a contract or, you know...
No, Jim and him don't particularly get on, I don't think. And also that, his agent has talked with Derek Bowden about a contract, and so clearly the two are not... What they want.
And his dad has sent a note, hasn't he?
Well, his dad spoke up in a press conference, didn't he?
Really?
His dad spoke up in a press conference when
Alex
played
play
Wigan.
For you, so...
But, I mean, I don't know. I think Alex Bruce is a reasonable Championship defender, no more. And I think if we can get someone... I think we could easily get someone who's better, put it like that.
No, I agree with you.
Anyway, we're running out of time. We need to talk about Norwich and things like that.
I've got one more, but that can wait till next week because it doesn't matter. Honestly, it can wait till next week. That's an easy one.
You've got the scoreline from the Norwich game.
Yeah, we won 4-0.
Excellent.
Go on then, quickly, about the Norwich game. Yes, absolutely.
Well, obviously, it's a... who's going out of us?
Me.
You are. How are you getting there? Because that's the major issues with the game are...
In my friend's Range Rover, so
really?
I think we'll make... Actually, it might be in her sports car with the roof down, blonde hair in the wind.
Marvellous.
So, that's a big one.
I mean, the Range Rover might be advantageous if, of course, the A140 is blocked.
Indeed.
And you have to go off-road.
We're off-roading.
Yeah.
I don't know, actually. It's no good going up the A140, is it? We'll just never get there.
No, I'm going
the
A12.
Yeah.
Going by sea is probably going to be easy.
Yeah, I've got the windsome.
Harwich Harbour.
That would have been a great idea, wouldn't it? Someone just hire a little boat and take everyone up there and back again.
That'd perhaps you should do this. Hire a battleship. Go up the Wensum.
Or a submarine. Then we could sort of rise up.
Well, that would be very good, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, there you go. I know Town Fan is a submariner, so I'll have a word.
Do you?
Yeah.
Was that Paul Submariner?
And you're not going. You're boycotting the game, Graham.
I'm boycotting it, yeah. The first time I haven't been for years. £31, it's just ridiculous, I think. And also, you know, as you say, no trains. You're going to sit on the thing. You're going to get kept in. At pubs, they're going to pretend to shut, which they're not. And it's on Sky, so, yeah, I know. It's terrible, isn't it? But
no, I can entirely... and I know that the club, it was the first time I think that the tickets for the derby have ever gone on general sale.
I know, it's extraordinary.
Because people just sort of thought, well, you know, it's stupid.
Is that the credit crunch, though, do you think?
Well, I mean, it's obviously a combination of things. It's 1:15 kickoff, no trains, it's on Sky, it's near Christmas. It's you know, people are poorer than they have been.
But
it's
you would think that would be countered by the belief that we really ought to be able to hammer them.
Well, it's a general trend. I mean, even on the morning of the Manchester Derby last weekend, you could still get tickets.
Really?
As well as Chelsea Arsenal as well.
Really?
Amazing, isn't it?
They sold it out eventually, but...
To tourists, probably.
If you went in early enough, you could sustain.
Has the game burnt itself out?
I think price-wise, certainly.
I paid £26 for Saturday. North and lower.
It's a lot of money, isn't it?
And I'm overjoyed about.
Whereas Birmingham last week, Birmingham was only £15, wasn't it?
It was. It was, and I think Doncaster was about a tenner, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. So, okay.
Hopefully, Chesterfield or Droylston will be about £3.50.
Well, the problem with that is the club doesn't set the prices themselves.
No.
They have to set it with the opposition club. Now you can
and
imagine
Droylston.
They'll
want a payday, won't they?
Well, exactly. We'll want a few quid, won't they?
Yeah, that could be.
Actually, Droylston's ground is called, I can't think, Butcher's Arms Park or something. And it's, I looked this up today, and its nickname is the Slaughterhouse or the Abattoir.
Oh, how lovely.
This is fantastic. I'm quite pleased.
One dribbles in anticipation of a play.
Talking about dribbling, do you want to quickly dribble on once more about the contact numbers for this book, and then we'll just go?
Then we'll do a
you'll have to do a quick... All right, do a quick prediction first, then we'll have the numbers for the book. Very, very quickly.
Quick prediction, Norwich. 3-1 to us.
Well, hey, Joe.
If we start one up front, I think we'll lose. Mm. If we start two up front,
I think we'll
2-0.
Yeah.
I think we'll start two up front, to be honest, and I think we'll win... Yeah, I like your 3-1, but I'll go 2-0.
Okay. Jane, do you want to quickly finish the show?
Yeah, that number's 0778 878 2537. Any queries about having a Christmas or Valentine's Day present?
Absolutely. And you can get it through Phil, of course.
Yeah, www.
Could we just have that address again?
Yeah, it's www.twtd.co.uk/
website of the year.
Trust book.
Okay.
It's like the century.
Oh,
okay.
Sorry.
Good luck to the boys next Sunday.
Yeah.
Thanks to Jane. Thanks to Joe. Thanks to Phil. Till next week. Have a good one. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.
See ya.